You're listening to DVD Talk Radio.
Greetings, pod people. This is Cine Schlockerama columnist Noel Gross back with another Schlockcast. This time we're going to get lost with the Space Family Robinson. Lost in Space is finally completely on DVD. All three seasons, all 83 episodes are available for your perusal. The third season contains probably the quintessential Lost in Space episodes. Yes, friends, it's the Great Vegetable Rebellion. No other episode better showcases the sci-fi classics camp heights than this Technicolor world of vegetables. And Dr. Smith and the robot and young Will Robinson are all right there in the middle of it. And it's a sight to behold. Actually, a guy dressed, he's not dressed. He's an actual carrot, right? Well, it's, this guy in this big carrot costume that is convinced that he's going to convert or transmutate the Robinsons into different vegetables. And Dr. Smith is well on his way into becoming a giant stalk of celery and is pretty happy about it. It's sort of a... Dr. Smith is a character known for his whining and conniving. This episode, he doesn't do very much of that. He spends most of that actually trying to do something nice for the robot, which is sort of out of character. And second, going along with this thing of becoming a celery stalk. I'm not sure how that happens. It must be some sort of vegetable mojo that the giant carrot is pulling off. My favorite line of the episode has to be when Professor Robinson, you know, the swashbuckling former Zorro Guy Reynolds, hauls off with this line and says, "Whatever that carrot is up to, we're getting out of here." You know, whatever that carrot is getting. He says that with a straight face. I can't believe it. It's so too funny. But, you know, as Cineschloggers, we love this, camp factor and all that sort of thing. And there's no more enduring series for me. I grew up watching these, of course, in reruns. I'm not that old. But we grew up watching these things in reruns. Some of us, the elder Cineslockers of the group, you know, saw them when they were first aired. And it's a family that the Robinsons are very close to our heart. For that reason, it's a little bit disappointing with presumably the wealth of extras available. There's a lot of fans out there who've been collecting things over the years. How there is so little in the way of extras on these three releases. Well, actually, it's more than that. It gets complicated. The first season of Lost in Space was released as one big honking box set with 24 or so episodes. That didn't sell so well, so they split the second season into two parts. You know, that way they have a lower price point at the register. But it's confusing to fans. They think they're getting, you know, the whole thing, but really they're only getting half of it. And it's further confusing because when you get the second half of Season 2 or the second half of Season 3, they also did the same thing of Season 3. Well, they number the episodes, you know, 1 through 14 or what, you know, however it works out. And so that's bad. It's just a consumer and especially as a fan level. I want number, you know, episode 24. Well, in the documentation or the episode guides, they explain that. They put the proper dates on there. But on the numbering of the discs and so forth, it's not correct. So that's bad. Anyway, back to no extras. Well, I shouldn't say no extras. It's just limited extras. The first set, they threw us the original pilot that didn't have Dr. Smith in it. So that was very cool. Second, they tossed on some radio interviews that were fun, especially Dr. Smith, Jonathan Harris. I got to meet the guy, and I still call him Dr. Smith. And I don't think he would mind that. It was one of his great great loves in life, great achievements, was his role on Lost in Space. And he talks about that on this final disc, a set of the series. The season three, the second part, which contains the second to the last episode, which is the Great Vegetable Rebellion, which is I guess if you were going to, you know, pick and choose, maybe you'd buy that last set of episodes. But I encourage you to get all of them, of course, and watch them all, because they're all great. He talks for about 5 minutes or so about how he landed the role and all that sort of thing in a contemporary interview. It was done, well, it's not that contemporary. It was done in 95, which is, you know, 10 years ago now, and Mr. Harris passed away a couple of years back. There's also a fun little blooper, and Bill Mumy gets an interview, and he's quite colorful, talks about working with Bob May, who starred as the robot. He wasn't the voice of the robot, but he was inside the robot. Now, judging by some of the tracking that I can do via the miracle of the internet, not all of you are as jazzed about Lost in Space as I am, so I'm going to move on off of it. But if you are curious, I've got a great primer for the series. I did a very in-depth piece on the first season that gives you some character profiles, and I pick out some must-see episodes of that first season, and I sort of ratchet it back a little bit on the second season. And just to show you how lazy I've gotten the third season, all I'm going to do is tell you, hey, the Great Vegetable Rebellion is the best, greatest episode that, if you only see one Lost in Space episode, I think it's a great introduction to the series and a great way to remember the series. Peter Packer, the writer of the episode, came to Jonathan Harris, gave him this script, and was ashamed. He says, I have not an idea in my head. This is the last thing that I could think of. You know, forgive me, basically. And it turns out to be one of fans' favorite episodes and, a near classic in sci-fi camp. TV Guide picked it as, I believe, one of its top 100 moments or something like that of sci-fi on television. That particular episode made that ranking, and it was a source of great amusement to Jonathan Harris. That little tidbit I picked up from a trip to Chiller Theater Expo, which I encourage everyone to go to at least once. Check out, it's right up there with any sort of fan experience you can go to. It is much more intimate than, say, a Comic-Con or something like that that I reported on in the past. Anyway, Jonathan Harris was there, and I got to meet the great Dr. Smith, and me and about 150 of my closest friends had an audience with Mr. Harris, who regaled us for about an hour of all sorts of great stories from Lost in Space. And his recollections of Great Vegetable Rebellion are included in a little transcript of that meeting that is available on CineShalakarama.com, and I'll put links to that on the regular column. Another sort of blast from my particular past is a former CineShalakarama's Most Wanted capture. It was sort of a roundabout way that you could get the first two episodes or the pilot movie of Airwolf via some sort of subscription club, so I counted that as a capture. But really and truly now, we have a true capture of Airwolf, because we have the first season right here. On my hot little hand, I have the great Jan Michael Vincent Ernest Borgnine helicopter adventure series, Airwolf. Now, looking on the back here, it would appear that Barry Van Dyke was a star of Airwolf during its first season, but that's not correct. He didn't come in until the fourth season, and the only reason that happened is Jan Michael Vincent got a little bit difficult to deal with toward the end of his mainstream career. He went in to do B pictures and all that sort of thing, but he had trouble with the sauce and everything else, but he's a CineShalaker idol. Got sort of a mean streak when he was drinking, and that's very sad. Anyway, Airwolf, which is not very sad, it's a great series. Of course, it was sort of inspired by the A-Team and, of course, the Blue Thunder movie. At the same time, a Blue Thunder TV series came out, and so this was the answer to the Blue Thunder TV series. Blue Thunder only lasted 11 episodes, so if you ever If you ever want to know who wins in a fight between Blue Thunder and Airwolf, well, it's pretty clear because who lasted longer, and that's Airwolf. You know, Airwolf is this super high-tech helicopter that can go, you know, Mach 2 or whatever. It's super fast. You know, it can disable its rotor and hit these turbines and go zipping across the sky. Well, most of the time it spends its time on close to the ground, avoiding radar and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, you've got Ernie Borgnine sitting in the back, you know, cracking jokes and looking after brooding Jan Michael Vincent. Really, the first two episodes, that pilot movie, is sort of the origin of Airwolf and that sort of thing, and why you know, Jan Michael Vincent winds up stealing it and, you know, using it to help out Alex Cord, who plays this guy named Archangel, who wears all white and is missing an eye and only works with beautiful women, but that are also super smart and all that kind of stuff. It's a great series, adventure series. It, you know, honestly, it doesn't quite hold up as well as it did in my imagination as I was rewatching some of these episodes. I honestly have not waded through each and every one of this 9 hours of season one. But there's some great moments early on. You know, there's an episode with Shannon Doherty as a very young girl who stows aboard one of Santini. Helicopters and all sorts of, you know, crazy things like that. There's an episode toward the, I think, the middle of the run where David Carradine shows up, which makes it, you know, if David Carradine shows up, then you must have some sort of legitimate TV series because he was in everything. Can't wait, you know, for the whole series to come out. That would be 3 seasons with Jan Michael Vincent, and then the fourth season was manufactured. They threw in, you know, Barry Van Dyke to make up enough episodes to syndicate the show, and it was picked up on USA, and I think they even called it Airwolf 2 or something, trying to hide the fact that it, you know, wasn't really Airwolf with the original cast and so forth. So, Jan Michael, where are you, man? We want to hear from you. Now, I mentioned Sinish Lakarama's Most Wanted earlier, and, you know, we're working our way up to 30 captures. That's amazing, isn't it? 30 captures. Well, the latest that we have is Soggy Bottom, USA. And that's 142 weeks on the lam, but finally we have it on DVD. Unfortunately, it's not the, let me grab it here, not the DVD that we would like it to be. It came out from Koch Vision, which is a sort of an unusual choice for them, but here it is anyway. Now, when I said Airwolf kind of played better in my mind, as a, you know, my memory of it was somewhat better than the, you know, highly recommended disc, of course, but well, that is very true of Soggy Bottom, USA. I rewatched that, and it wasn't nearly the raucous adventure that I remembered as a kid seeing it in theater. Yeah, out in East Texas, because it was a big deal because it was shot out in East Texas, and we loved it, Soggy Bottom, USA, because it was our people, essentially. Also, too, I remembered it sort of as a Dukes of Hazzard sort of picture, and it's got some of that, the chase elements of that sort of thing, but there really wasn't a Daisy Duke sort of character, and you would think there would be, because in the early VHS editions that you will surely, I know that you remember seeing these in the video stores, it had a gal in the Daisy Duke outfit, you know, the little skimpy shorts and the, you know, the tied top and all that sort of thing. Well, you know, she's nowhere to be seen in this, so of course, you know, I'm rewatching this, you know, 15, you know, almost, well, gee, 20 years later, and she's nowhere in there, so, you know, imagine my disappointment when she does not show up. But you do have a very young Don Johnson, who's obsessed with building a fan boat. There's all sorts of coon hunting, which is sort of tense these days to even say that, but it really is, you know, a Disneyfied Cannonball Run, I think, is probably where it lands more. And, you know, glad to have it on DVD. It's not quite the movie that I remember, but, you know, nonetheless, it is out. they show that it's a right here that it's what they call 4x3 letterbox. Well, there's no letterboxing going on. The 4x3 just means it's full frame. And I don't believe that to be the correct ratio at all, because it was shot in 35mm, and the framing is, often off kilter, and so bad marks on DVD presentation, because not only is it kind of scratchy and that sort of thing, it's not presented in its original ratio, and even Soggy Bottom USA deserves to be seen. It was originally shot, and that's my little mini rant on that. All right, I got three more discs that I want to run down super quick here for you. Just received in the mail Blue Underground's lauded Fire and Ice restoration. It looks great. I looked at it, checked it out. And from what I understand, this animated picture is just supposed to make Lord of the Rings fans nuts, because they say that, you know, it's ripping off Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff. So if it it tweaks the Lord of the Rings fans, I'm all for it. So check it out, the two-disc edition with this super special lenticular cover art that's, you know, the sword and sandal epic with the bosomy animated babes and all that kind of stuff. So hey, what's not to like about that? Remember when I said I was hankering for a Sub Rosa picture that would capture my imagination, and I was just certain that Razor Teeth would be the one, because I'm a big fan of Piranha movies. One of my favorite pictures of all time is the original Piranha from Roger Corman. I'm sorry, but Razor Teeth is not it. And it's one of those pictures where they're padding out the time where, you know, the guy, you see the guy driving the car, and then you, for like 5 minutes, and then he gets to where he's going, and you actually, the camera stays on him while he, you know, turns off the car. Sometimes they'll even have a cutaway of the guy turning the car off. Then you see him get out of the car, and then you see him walk up the sidewalk, and then you see him knock on the door, and then you see him wait for somebody to come to the door and then start talking. Well, it's that sort of movie. So they're trying to pad it out so much that you get to see a lot of mundane stuff like that, when really you want to see guys getting eaten up by piranhas, and there's precious little of that in this movie. Let's see, what else? Oh, you know, sometimes I wonder what kind of sicko you people think that I am. You know, I love the, Z-grade movies, but I got an email from a hardworking B-movie maker out there who sent me a picture called Slaughter Disc, A Tale from the Carnal Morgue. And you know what it is? It's basically XXX horror. I'm watching this thing, punch it in. You know, it says all over here, unrated director's cut, XXX, porn everywhere. Well, I'm like, well, maybe it's not, and I'm, well, sure enough, I'm watching the thing, and it's the story of a haunted DVD that this geeked out, porn fiend watches, and every time that he watches it, he sees somebody, sees this gal, rub fake blood all over herself, and then slit her throat or something. It's creeped me out to no end, especially over in the behind the scenes when they interview the young starlet who plays Andromeda Strange. Well, she's talking about fluffers and all sorts of other things, and then you've got her male counterpart who is also, I believe, in the professional business. And they actually have to show him with ropes around his arms. He has to hold him up to the camera to say, hey, I'm Joe Pornstar, and I'm not restrained, and I'm doing this of my own volition. I think that's a good indication of what sort of movie this is. So, it's not for me, but maybe it's for some of y'all, out there in my listening audience and my reading audience, be warned, this is exactly what it says it is. There's no kidding around here. This is gross out gore and hardcore cavorting. So, check that out, or not, or, I'm not making any recommendation on this, I don't even know how it got to my house. Anybody want this? Anyway, that's a good idea. Anybody want this? That's right. Let me say, 5 of you. yeah, the first five of you who to email me and tell me, hey, that you enjoyed the podcast or you hated the podcast or you wish that, you know, just go back to writing and quit jabbering. Well, you know, write me anyway, and let's, first five of you will get a DVD from my Gunny Sack of Goodies. And I've actually got some good stuff in there. Folks hooked me up when I was at Comic-Con. I got some new Lightning Bug discs and some Dawn of the Dead discs and all sorts of good stuff. And, you know, and if you can prove that you're, you know, 21 or 41 and a total creepazoid, well, maybe I'll send you a Slaughter disc and you can check it out for yourself. All you got to do is write me at feedback@cineschlockerama.com. And until next time, this has been Cineschlockerama columnist Noel Gross. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to DVD Talk Radio. Find DVD Talk Radio online at dvdtalkradio.com.